We'll turn to members of the public. Is there anyone present in the room who wishes to testify in favor of this bill?
Good morning, Senator Kearney, Representative Noonan, distinguished members of the Committee on the Judiciary. My name is Megan Sway, and I'm the policy director at the ACLU of Maine. I was also a member of the committee that met this past month. On behalf of the ACLU of Maine, we are here to support this, all of this bill, but particularly Section A7 that provides consequences when the state violates the defendant's right to consult with their attorney privately. Access to counsel is among the most important of the rights guaranteed to citizens by the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution. Access to effective counsel includes the right to have confidential conversations with one's attorney without government overhearing what is said. For too many people in Maine, access to private conversations with their defense attorneys is treated as a privilege for the few instead of a constitutional right for all. As one report found, jails in Androscoggin, Aroostook, Franklin, Kennebec, Penobscot, and York counties reported almost 1,000 phone calls that jail defendants made to their counsel between June 2019 and May 2020. One of the premises of our legal system is that if you break the law, there are consequences. Yet when it comes to government officials violating the rights of defendants to speak with their attorneys in confidence, practically speaking, there are not currently serious consequences imposed. This undermines the perception of fairness and actual fairness in our legal system. Section A7 of this bill would make it so that attorney-client communications intercepted by the government are not admissible in a criminal proceeding, and any person who improperly intercepts that communication cannot appear as a witness against the defendant if the government had actual or constructive notice. We hope that Section A7 will incentivize government actors, jails, prisons, district attorneys, and police to put into place the protective mechanisms that the rest of the bill provides for so that they don't violate defendants' rights. We ask you to support this legislation to ensure that guardrails are put into place so that defendants' rights to speak privately with their attorneys are honored. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from Representative Moriarty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sway, what I've gleaned from both the report and the bill is that in addition to the exclusion of it, to record the conversations, equally important consideration is the chilling effect of knowing or suspecting that your conversations may be
correct.
Is that fair to say?
Yes. So defendants should have an expectation that when they're talking with their lawyer on a call, that it is protected. If they're talking about their case, which you wouldn't be on the, there might be a reason, but I find it hard to think of reasons why you would be on the phone with your defense attorney if we're not discussing your case. You should have an expectation that that conversation is private. And right now, a lot of folks in Maine's jails and prisons do not have that expectation, or because of the rampant recording of calls. And so it's both important to allow defendants to communicate, but also this gets into when you go to court and you say, I was having this conversation with my attorney, the state overheard, and that was improper. One of the questions is, did you have an expectation of privacy? You know, was it reasonable for you to expect that that call was going to be heard? Because if you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, like if I'm sitting here talking in the corner with my lawyer and you all are all here, then I don't have a reasonable expectation that you wouldn't overhear, and that would not be privileged. So it's both a chilling effect and a practical legal issue that comes up.
Senator Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you speak a little bit to, I guess I was asking Senator Kearney about this, but the underlying policy that we're trying to remedy, and I don't know if you know any of the history of how and why kind of the blanket policy of reporting phone calls was established. I'm just trying to wrestle with the purpose and history of that.
Yes. I mean, I think there are several layers. One is that all facilities use private contractors to facilitate phone calls. Mm-hmm. And one of the services they offer is recording of conversations. Police and sometimes prosecutors use the recordings to do investigative work. So we know in drug interdiction cases that it's very common, and a theme that came up was that in trying to investigate drug cases, there was listening in on phone calls. As Representative Breckett said, in cases of domestic violence with family and household members, there's a monitoring to ensure that people to see whether protective orders are being violated. So it's used as an investigative tool, and courts have found that if you are not recording the conversation between attorney and client, that it is permissible under the law.
Okay.
Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So we're clearly discussing a very important and constitutionally intricate subject matter here. The testimony that we received before would seem to indicate that these recordings were simply oversight, and yet your testimony seems to take a different approach, and that it was almost a malicious or intentional recording of over 1,000 phone calls. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I'm not trying to make a judgment about whether it was malicious or intentional or not, but what's clear is that there weren't procedures in place to stop it. So whether or not it was an intentional act or an oversight, there should be protective mechanisms, there should be policies and procedures in place to make sure it doesn't happen. So that we're not having conversations about whether or not people intended to listen or not intended. That's, to me, that's almost beside the point. The fact is that it happened. And that's what I'm concerned with stopping it happening, not trying to cast aspersions, like question people's motives.
And is there currently a method right now that would, it seems as though that there are some methods in some municipalities, in some counties that restrict it, but that there are not in all, and that's what we're trying to remedy here. Is that accurate?
I think, yes, what we found, what we heard was that there's sort of a patchwork of systems, and that some state actors do have things, but most actors do not have written policies. It's oral, and it just depends on whether or not the information is relayed to you. And so the intent of this is so that it's written down and there is something that everybody knows what the policy is, and it's not dependent on an oral tradition alone, and that everybody is aware of what the rule is and follows them.
Thank you.
Senator Moriarty?
Thank you. Ms. Way, this question may not go to you, but I'll just put it out there anyway. I'm looking at section 815, dealing with both meeting space and particularly storage space. Do you know whether or not our detention facilities maintain lockers for the secure storage of materials?
I think that's addressed in the report. My understanding is that many do not. Some may have. I think that's why that's in the separate part of the bill. There was a decision not to require it immediately, but to study the issue and make recommendations, was my understanding. I don't have the language in front of me, so I may be misstating. But I am all to say there was testimony that certain courthouses do not have storage, and certain facilities do not, but that it's very individualized. And I'm sure others here to testify today could give you more precise information. Thank you.
Are there others present in the room who wish to testify in favor of this bill?